man beaching and wait, wait for me.
Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Singer-songwriter Tift Merritt has made records for more than 15 years. She first got widespread notice with Bramble Rose. And while her series of albums has won her fans and critical praise, her latest album emerged at a time when Merritt found herself at a new juncture in her life.
Merritt became a mom a little more than a year ago, and the transition naturally has led to some soul-searching. Tift Merritt was in Milwaukee not long ago for a concert at Schenck Hall, and she joined us in the performance studio and shared some music, including this song called Wait For Me.
Lady, and you gotta do right by your dreams. I wanna do right by my baby, and my baby wanna do right. By me, oh my baby, wanna do right. By me, oh my baby, wanna do right. By me. Oh, wait for me.
Tift Merritt in the Lake Effect Performance Studio, Wait For Me. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a thrill to have you here.
Thank you.
I had all sorts of questions I was going to ask you to start. And you know, there's always a lot of pressure on that first question.
Oh, yeah.
But I was watching you sitting here watching you play, and the first question that really occurred to me to ask is about your really cool-looking guitar. Oh. Which sounds kind of shallow. But.
No. Guitars, you know, nothing about cool guitars is shallow. Because, you know, cool guitars have soul. This is a 1964 Hummingbird that a guitar shop where I'm from called me when it came in from the North Carolina mountains. Had been sitting in somebody. They said, you know, a woman whose husband had passed away. It had stayed in a closet for a really long time. And it's a Hummingbird, which I've always wanted a Hummingbird. You know, all the girl singers in the 70s had doves or Hummingbirds. It has this very feminine inlay on the pickguard. And sometimes they can be really tinny, but this one has a lot of warmth and depth. So it was kind of my dream guitar. And a lot of people don't take their nice guitars on the road, but gosh, I don't, you know, that's like having a pretty dress and not wearing it, so.
Well, and so the guitar shop, they saw it come in and they said, this one looks like Tift Merritt?
Mm-hmm, they did. They called me right away and I went right over, and somebody else had offered them cash in the meantime, and they saved it for me.
I'm glad I asked about it.
Mm-hmm. It's a, you know, these 60s Gibsons is really what I play, because they're such great strumming guitars. I'm not a fancy player, but I'm a rhythm player, and they strum so well that I they're my favorites.
You said the guitar shop where you're from, and I was going to ask about that because
yeah.
I think if I have my Tift Merritt chronology right, you've been from North Carolina.
Maybe you can help me with it.
And Texas and Paris for a while.
Yeah.
And I think the last time we talked, it was via Skype and you were in your apartment in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm from North Carolina. I mean, you know, I have a lot of other places that are dear to my heart. But I'm from North Carolina, and I have that kind of very rooted, gnarled relationship with my roots where, you know, it just goes really, really deep. You know, it doesn't mean that it's Paris or Rome or anything like that, but it's where I'm from. And I actually moved back when I had my daughter so that I could be close to my parents and have things be simple for her. And we live right near this old graveyard that I bike through with her a lot, and my grandparents are buried there. And, you know, I realize that I have heard of most of the people in that graveyard, or, you know, they knew my grandparents or my mother went to school with them, or, you know, there's this, I know where the street that's named after that fam, you know, it's just, and I think, you know, my original person it like feels really hemmed in by that. But I think it getting realer with it, that's a really special kind of depth that isn't always around these days.
I want to turn back to your most recent album. I guess the last time we spoke in person, yeah, we were talking about this, was 10 years ago.
That's really weird. You look the same.
It's amazing because once you lose most of your hair, it's forever gone.
You look exactly the same to me, so.
Well, and you look the same to me,
too.
I
do not.
Well, and did you see yourself – are you still in touch with where you saw yourself in the music world 10 years ago?
No. No. I mean, I mean, that's an interesting day to ask me that question, but no, not at all. I mean, my life has gone in a really in some unexpected ways. So, you know, I mean, the music industry is just really different. So, you know, even if my feelings about it hadn't changed, it is different. So,
are you at the point where I don't want to put words in your mouth, but. You know, when you're a younger person in any field, you kind of have a certain set of expectations for what the field, I don't know that it owes you anything, but what you expect to get from the field. And when you get older, do those expectations go away?
I think that's – I think it really depends on your experience and you know, I don't think that we should ever stop hoping and dreaming, you know.
I wondered if expectations get replaced with more subtle hope or dreams.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm really in a transition. I have a lot of questions. I mean, honestly, you've caught me in probably a good time to be interviewed because I haven't been doing very many interviews and... You know, I'm thinking a lot about all of this. I'm in my 40s now. I have a child. I never really turned a corner in the music business, so I can't really go around the world playing to 150, 200 people. I just can't. It's not economically feasible. It's not physically feasible. And so that, you know, that's – I don't think that that's – going to change. So you kind of have to say, okay, let's get real about this. And, you know, I think for me, being an artist was never something I wanted to do as a hobby. But I might have to, you know, I might have to do it on the side. And I'm kind of this full-on person that doing anything on the side is not in my nature. But I also feel really confused by the world at this moment. And I really feel very confused about what our culture is mirroring. I feel really confused about the state of our government and the state of the world. And I feel like pop culture is a little bit indulgent and trying to take up space in the world of so much content it makes me uncomfortable. I hate social media. I feel like it's, bragging, and I was raised very much that you didn't do that. So, you know, I think maybe it isn't my place anymore. Maybe the world needs something different from me, and I'm just trying to listen really carefully to what that might be, and it may just be Gene's mom.
Well, I wondered if having this other important role, it crowds out these other things, but it allows these other things to take on smaller places while still giving you something important to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, I've always I was always a little afraid of being a mom because I really like being a grown-up, and I really love, you know, working and writing and time by myself. And I thought, what if I become a mother and the conflict between those two things is really severe and it doesn't make me happy, and then I'll feel like the worst person the world has ever known. And also just putting economic pressure on your work is always scary for anyone in any field. But being a mother just has been the best thing that ever happened to me. And I really, you know, it sounds a little trite, but I thought that I was a musician, but I'm actually a mom. I think that there's more music and poetry in my life now than there ever has been. And you kind of feel the bottom drop in ways that, you know, in the best moments in music, playing music, you do feel the bottom drop, and you feel affirmed, and you feel moved, and like life is bigger than the moment you were in. But, you know, I feel that pretty much all day, every day with Gene. So whatever else happens kind of doesn't matter quite so much.
And there's no way to I don't want to sound condescending when I say this.
Please, tell me you told me so.
No, but those questions that you were talking about, you know, this feeling like, you know, I'm a grown-up and I like this time to myself, and you know, am I going to be essentially the same person, or is this all going to be lost when I have a child? I want to say there's not a parent in the world that hasn't asked that before their child is born, but I know there are parents that haven't asked that. But I think for a lot of us, I mean, you're definitely not alone in thinking about that.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it's interesting because Gene's been with me on the road all this year, and I don't know that we're going to do that a whole lot more, at least for the time being. But there are a lot of really good things about it. You know, for all you musician moms out there, I mean, you don't cook, you don't do laundry. There's a finite amount of stuff to throw around. You know, that sort of home containment cycle of you put it up, they pull it off. You clean it, they mess it up. You clean it, they mess it up. You know, like, you kind of get away from that on the road. And that's, I think, been something that's been really special to me.
I have lots more questions I want to ask you.
Please.
But I'll ask you this question first. Do you have another song you might want to share with us?
I want to play this one. It's called My Boat. It's based on a Raymond Carver poem. My boat, it's being made to order. Right now it's with the builder. My boat, my friends, room on board for my friends. I'm serious about this. My boat, George, Gary, Chuck, and Jim. Room enough for all of them and my baby on my boat. No one will be tonight on my boat, on my boat. No getting ahead, falling behind on my boat, on my boat. Just having a real good time on my boat, on my boat, on my boat, on my boat. Stories, room on board for stories, my own and everybody's, going on and on. Short ones, true ones, and the made up ones still being written on my boat. Cherries, chicken, cheese, and wine. Everything good, and my friends like, and my baby on my boat. No one will be. Getting ahead of falling behind on my boat, on my boat. Just having a real good time on my boat, on my boat, on my boat, on my boat.
singing, eating and laughing down on my boat. You just do whatever you want on my boat. We may go a little ways down the coast. We're gonna listen to the rolling stones on my boat. I've always wanted a trip like that. If it don't work out, it's my boat. No one will be tonight on my boat, on my boat. You're getting it falling behind on my boat, on my boat. Just having a real good time on my boat, on my boat. No one will be tonight on my boat, on my boat, on my boat. On my boat. My boat is being made to order. Right now it's with the builder. My boat.
I think that is my favorite song on that album.
Oh, you do?
I love
you know,
that song.
I think it might be mine too. And I just felt like that was such a, you know, When I wrote it, I mean, I didn't write the words. Obviously, Raymond Carver wrote the words, and they're beautiful. And I thought, no getting ahead or falling behind on my boat was just such a wonderful way to describe decent human relationships, you know, or decency. And you know, all of a sudden, all these things happened, and so I think it's really important to say nobody will be denied on my boat, and that's like what life is about and what this country is supposed to be about too. So
do you ever reflect on the luxury? I don't know that it's a luxury. Okay. Mm-hmm. But on the luxury of being able to have the gift of expressing yourself musically when you have a child?
You know, I think there's no one in the world that will remind you how small you are more than your child. And, that really does not come into play because I don't sing to her in any kind of showy way. I mean, maybe I don't sing to you in any kind of showy way either, but one of my first truly distinct memories of music was hearing my mother sing this lullaby, "Go Tell Aunt Patsy the Old Gray Goose Is Dead," and she'd sing it really low and soft. And she thinks she has a terrible voice. You know, she thinks she's the least musical person in the world. And that's like one of my most treasured musical memories, is my mother singing off key to me. So I will say, one night Jean would not go to sleep. And she's been on the road a lot. So she knows the ins and outs of a gig. You know, she knows that the chords get plugged into the amp and the guitar and all that kind of stuff. And she climbed into her baby's cradle, and I started to sing her to sleep, thinking that, oh, maybe we got it. And she closed her eyes, and I thought maybe we were getting there, and then she opened them at the end of the song, and she clapped. I thought, oh, my God, I'm screwed.
I can't let you go without asking about this, and I think this is the first time I've gone down this road in a music interview, but I do want to ask about your textile work.
Oh, thank you very much.
How did that interest come about?
Well, I'm a textile junkie. You know, I buy wool blankets at flea markets and scarves and handkerchiefs, and then I started getting into vintage ribbon. And I didn't know what to do with it. And I started sewing it onto guitar straps, onto leather, and making my own guitar straps. And it just so happened that I have a really old friend who has a furniture company that he recruits people from other mediums to do design projects. And I never, ever, ever said, hey, don't you think I should do something? But
did you think it?
yeah, I had my fingers crossed. But I was nervous, too, because he works with just amazing, amazing, amazing people, many of whom I've met through our friendship. So he asked me if I could try to do some textile designs. And I just happened to be 8 months pregnant, and I didn't know how to even begin. But I went to a Xerox machine and started experimenting with patterns with all these beautiful ribbons and textures that I had with the leather and the pock marks of the needles. And just a song, it's the same thing with a song. Like a song is the instrument and the feelings and the way it is in your hands. And that process is just feel. So I just kind of tried to do that visually with this Xerox machine and a bunch of old ribbon. And then they took it to the mills and we experimented with different colors, and it was a really fascinating process. I don't by any stretch of the imagination think that I'm going to get to go like make textiles for a living, but it was a really, really, really wonderful project and wonderful people involved, and really wonderful to make something beautiful in that way that kind of stands on its own. And I don't really know what success or failure is in terms of sales in the furniture world, So maybe
you don't get a gold chair.
I
called.
I said, I'm happy to do this, but I've never been a commercial success at anything in my life. So.
Well, I was wondering when you send something like that into the world, whether it's the same feeling you have when you send a song into the world.
Yeah. It's a return to unknowing. It's a return to being at the beginning, which, if you can do that every time you make something, that's really wonderful. So it was a little like sending off super early demos and having somebody be like, oh my gosh, that's good. When the creative process is in conversation with other people in a successful and kind and honest and constructive way, there's nothing better. And that is actually what happened.
And I can't help but think, as you're talking about this, that parenthood is the ultimate creative process.
That's an interesting question. I don't think that Jean is my creation. Like Jean is, I am her, I don't know what the right word is. I mean, I guess I'm her mom. I'm here to be her rock. But I didn't make Jean. I mean, I have a very limited amount of influence over Jean for a limited time. And there's no way that any amount of effort I could put in would shape her in some way stronger than the presence that she was when she got here. So I am like the joyful participant. I'm the member of the choir. I'm the horse trainer and Jean is the horse.
Well, we should probably stop the metaphor there.
Yeah, shouldn't we? Cut that last part about the horse out. But I just want her to run. Have a good run.
Well, sorry.
So funny. Nobody's ever been like, hey, Tift, stop the metaphor. I guess I really like being a mom.
Well, I overthink outros here, but I'm going to say... Jean is lucky to have you.
Thank you so much. That's about the nicest thing you could say.
And we are lucky to have you, too.
Thank you.
What would you like to play us out with?
I'm going to play a song called Love Soldiers On.
Tift Merritt playing in the Lake Effect Performance Studio recently. Her latest album is called Stitch of the World. Our in-studio performance and conversation was engineered by Jason Reavy. You can see pictures from the in-studio session and hear all three songs that she played for us at WUWM.com.
100 times today won't leave you alone, no matter what you say. Love soldiers on. Love soldiers on, there's nothing you can do. Love will soldier on.